This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:39, you're with Kelvin and Hezrael on the Evening Edition, and we're now looking at what happens to development when a state and federal government are at odds with each other. So this comes as Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin asked Sabahans to elect a state government that's aligned to Putrajaya. He said this way, the new administration can ease the people's burden and better help them recover from the pandemic.
Yeah, so we've seen this argument crop up before and its actual impact on governance. The most obvious example is the disparity of allocations for federal MPs. For instance, under the previous Pakatan Harapan government, Pakatan MPs received 1.5 million ringgit while opposition MPs got 100,000. Opposition MPs argued that this was unfair since they had less funds to serve their constituents.
So, you know, this is so old.
Yeah.
This is such old politics.
It is.
So we've seen this all the way back before even, you know, to be fair, this also sort of happened even during Pakatan's time. Things got a bit better, but in the past, when it was during the UMNO-led Barisan National era, that was when we sometimes did see things like, oh, projects were delayed or certain infrastructure development schemes or plans were just not let through. And until it came to elections, and then, you know, you'll have leaders usually from the government's end saying stuff like, well, if you vote for us, maybe these projects will get through. And it's unfortunate that opposition held states, or we still see that unfairness where they are usually in some ways just punished, right? Because either it comes through you know, a reduction of federal controlled funds.
Yeah. And for me, Kel, I think the Prime Minister's message is disappointing because it comes now, right? At this point in time, when we've been talking about coming together to help each other and look out for each other, and you know, at a time when politics should be set aside to put the rakyat first, to put economic issues front and center, to make sure that aid gets distributed regardless of what your political tendencies are. I'm not sure if because remember, this also comes on the campaign trail, right? So I'm just wondering what people on the ground are thinking, if they do decide to vote for parties other than Perikatan or Barisan Nasional. So, and I just wonder when we can get past this, right, at a time when we're talking about MUDA, when we're talking about youth movements, and I think just in general, new hopes for the political direction in this country, because ultimately, governments are here to govern, right, and look at policies, and politics and campaigning are literally 2 weeks out of every 5 years. The rest of the time is aimed at policies and addressing real issues that go beyond what party you support and you know which one you don't.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah. You can conversely take it to mean that if you don't vote for me, development's going to be a bit harder for you.
Yeah, right. And that's It's sort of like it walks this very fine line between political messaging and the intention to provide better governance to Sabahans.
Ideally, even if a certain portion of the rakyat didn't vote for you, you still work for them. You should still serve them.
Yeah.
So we're going to this hour delve into how this translates on a state level. Yep. How are developments for the rakyat impacted if a state isn't politically aligned to the federal government, and what can be done to ensure that all states get equal aid and fair treatment so that they can prosper? We're going to cross over after this to political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. Stay tuned for that conversation. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
It's 6:45 on the Evening Edition. You're with Kelvin and Hezrael. We've been talking about what happens to development when a state and federal government just don't get along, or they are governed by different parties. So we're now crossing over to political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. Chin Huat, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. Thanks, Kelvin and Hezrael. Thanks for having me.
How important is it for state and federal governments to align politically, and what are the implications, especially in terms of development?
It is important, but it should not be that way. To think that federal and state governments should be politically aligned is to think as a one-party state, that winners takes all. At the moment now, we have the state controlling our municipalities because our local councils are all appointed. And now to think that the federal government should also control the state, at the end of the day, that means that election, we will decide, we can only decide the total winner. A party or a coalition that control from federal to state to municipal level, and that's bad. Multi-party democracy, more so when we are a federation, must be the opposite. Voters should have full freedom to choose different parties at the federal, state, and local level. If they choose the same parties to be in power, then it should be because they choose to do so, not because they are forced to do so. Otherwise, democracy is compromised. So, and this go back to the fact that it's not that we should put aside politics, but rather politics should be professionalized. Hmm. It should not be based on discrimination, which is like cheating in sports.
And how are states affected when their governments aren't aligned with Putrajaya from a practical standpoint?
They get sidelined from projects. And in the worst case, sometimes you have money that's supposed to be channeled for the opposition state are passed through some parallel institutions instead of the state government. The idea is that money still go to the state, but it will be spent by unelected proxies or appointees of the federal government rather than those the elected state government. The idea is to induce voters or even politicians to switch to the ruling federal ruling parties.
Right. And do Aduns receive less financial allocations in opposition states? How does that work?
Yes. Almost everywhere that the oppositions... It doesn't matter whether you are federal opposition states or federal ruling states. Rather that Aduns are discriminated within their states by the ruling party, and this cuts across just at different degree. Let's look at Sabah, for example. Under the outgoing Warisan government, a normal government backbenchers get 1.1 million a year. 800,000 are for infrastructure projects, mini projects, and 300,000 for welfare for the constituents. And all this money would be approved by a Pemimpin Pembangunan Masyarakat, PPM, who is appointed by the government backbencher. Now, if you are assistant minister, you get another 40,000 extra. But if you are a minister, you get 1 million extra. What happens if you are opposition member? Let's say those from PBS previously, or Bersatu, they would get, they do not get anything. The 1.1 million is still allocated to their constituency through PPM, but the PPM would be appointed by the chief minister office. So this is the bad practice that we find across the state. In some states, they would actually give some amount, like Penang, they give a small amount to the opposition. Mm. But much less than the government Aduns.
On the federal level, on the other hand, opposition MPs received 100,000 ringgit in allocations compared to government lawmakers under Pakatan Harapan. How did this affect the ability of MPs to serve their constituencies?
We look at this. If you think about their constituency service centres, the government MP actually get money to run their constituency service center as well. But the opposition one did not get anything, so they need to look for the money. Otherwise, they would be disadvantaged in providing services. While the money would go to the ground, and as many MP has pointed out recently in a Wacana Bersih Forum, that MPs do not really need up to 1.5 million to distribute to their constituency. What we actually, what they really need is actually enough money to support and to help some, to meet some welfare needs from their constituents without waiting for bureaucratic approval. And you really do need that much money. What they need is actually a fair treatment.
Has this in any way affected the efficacy of state governance? Because ultimately, DONs fall under federal constituencies, don't they?
Yes, yes. What happened is that you find that in the past that the governments are actually partisan towards their MPs. Like in the past, when in opposition-run states, the government, federal government, ADUNs, actually sometimes get money from the federal government. On the other hand, MPs from opposition party get money from the state government in those states they run. So they discriminate each other to try to even it out. But the problematic part is that at the end of the day, all these are actually public money. They treat them as if like this is their private property, then decide how what to do and so on. To me, this is cheating.
To just clarify that, you're saying that to an extent, there's the funds in a way are being sabotaged.
The funds are channeled in a partisan way based on how close you are to the government, whether federal or state government, so that they're basically helping their own their elected representative at the expense of their rivals.
Right.
In order that their own politicians stand a better chance in serving and pleasing their constituents. In other words, this is institutionalized clientelism. They use public money to buy hearts and minds of the public, making the public believing that it's their credit. But these are not your own money. I'm fine if the prime minister or the chief minister take out from their own pocket and give to people. They have the perfect freedom to do so. But these are taxpayers' money. And if they were to give it to lawmakers from the ruling parties, they must do so for the opposition parties. And my criticism is for both sides of the divide. PH was much better than PN, but they did not do that away.
Conversely, I guess, you know, looking at this from another perspective, are there any examples of states that have lagged behind despite being part of the ruling coalition? And what does this point to?
Actually, there are plenty of them. We look at Sabah and Sarawak. These are the two most rich, resource-rich states in Malaysia, but they're poor. Terengganu is poor. Kelantan is, of course, Kelantan has always been under opposition. But you look at some other states, like I think Kedah has not been particularly rich. Perlis has not been so. So the question here, if we go back to Sabah and Sarawak, how do we explain it? Sabah until from 1994 to 2018 were under opposition, and Sarawak has been, were under the BN government. And then Sarawak has been under BN since 1970, and even earlier, 66. So how do they actually stay so poor? They stay so poor because while there were money channeled in, but this money does not necessarily go down to the people. They get transferred to private pockets sometimes. They get simply wasted. And why is it so? Because you do not have effective competition. This is where discrimination hurts. When the playing field is not level, it protects incompetent players so they do not get thrown out even they run the state poorly. And this is how people suffer from underdevelopment, not just denial of funds.
Okay, so let's talk about reforms. What is needed to ensure that state development isn't influenced by political alignments between state governments and Putrajaya? And on WhatsApp, we do, I guess, have a suggestion here from CG that says, maybe we should decentralize the tax collection so that states can have some revenue. Like in the US, the states collect state tax. Federal needs to need to reduce their taxes.
I completely agree. I think that we should have even taxes collected by the federal government, like income tax, some part of it should actually be channeled back to the state. So that way, we can ensure state would have some money to spend. But beyond that, it's also a question of changing the norm, because there are some development projects, like let's say you want to introduce certain corridors, you can't put a law to decide how do you channel the money. So to really check on that level beyond tax distribution is to change the norm. For now, discrimination against your opponent, the opposition, is treated as legitimate or at least normal by most Malaysians. They should be seen as cheating and even stealing. Because, and you see that even during PH time, there were some PH supporters were very happy that opposition state get discriminated because they think that we have been discriminated, now it's your turn. We should really discard such partisan mentality.
Yeah, the payback is never worth it, honestly.
No, but you see, why people actually think so is because they think as if like they're gamblers. Because if you think that you're gamblers, you believe your luck will be good, you will be the winner all the time, so therefore you cheer for unfair advantages. We should instead think like insurance buyers. So the idea is not to, if you think like insurance buyers, you become very realistic. You want to hedge your risk when your luck is bad. So what we want to make sure is that there's no unfair disadvantages when the parties we support are not in power. If once Malaysia think that way and you penalize cheater, all this thing would be gone. But if you don't, not only that we suffer from uneven developments and incompetence, but also we contribute to this phenomena of party hopping. Because every now and then the lawmakers would say either individually they want to side with the government or entire state they may want to bring it down so that they will be aligned with the federal government. So we should really punish cheaters and thieves. This is our money. This is not their money. If anyone wants to discriminate against their opponent, take those money out of your private pocket. That's perfectly fine. Not abusing ours. Not stealing ours.
Chin-Hua, thank you so much for that analysis.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was political scientist Professor Wong Chin-Hua. We have the 7 p.m. news coming up. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.